call the business meeting, Board of Education, September 18th. To order.
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. Deogracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson.
Here.
Ms. Williams.
Here.
At this time, we'd like to recognize any visitors and invite comments from the public. Is there anybody in the audience who would like to speak to the board?
One person.
If you could state your name and your address, and you have about 3 minutes.
My name is Greg Kenser. The address is 516 Park. I have a letter that I wrote to the board that I will read into the record. It should be under 3 minutes.
Thank you.
I hope. It's from my family. My name is Greg Kenster. My wife is Song. The letter is entitled, it's to the board, members of the board, request for relief from residency requirement financial penalty. Dear board, a devastating fire occurred in our home last spring. Our home has been in our family since 1925. The structural damage was light. The smoke damage is extensive and will require much work. There have been delays in reaching agreements between the village, the insurance company, the construction contractor, and the public adjuster. The village completed an initial building permit to the contractor, issued a initial building permit to the contractor last Friday. The contractor started work today. District 90 asked us to complete an application for non-resident enrollment and present a check in the amount of $14,372 so that the children could continue to attend school. Another $14,372 will be due in the spring should the home not meet habitability codes. The home is being fitted with fire protection systems, etc. We are living in Oak Park in a home. If we are not granted some relief by the board, we must most likely will rent an apartment near Concordia. That is the habitation that's available in River Forest. We would save $7,000 in the fall and another $7,000 in the spring. We know the regulation requiring residency is reasonable. We are not arguing that. The regulation is written to affect parents' intentions to flout the residency requirement. It was never our intention to dissipate the requirement. We needed to deal with the tragedy the best we could. We will return to our home as soon as possible. Given the circumstances, we do not believe the spirit of the regulation is to be punitive to our family. In addition to the expense and hassle of moving, we will need to adjust to a new location. We have no idea how long we need to live there. This could harm the children's ability to perform socially and academically. Both of the children have superior academic skills and scoring. We're asking for an accommodation, either waiving or having the non-resident penalty fee. This would provide us a tremendous relief. Thank you. The guests.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? Okay. Next order of business was a Freedom of Information Act request. Did we follow up?
We did. We received a FOIA on September 7th pertaining to information about the recent collective bargaining agreement between the Board of Education and the River Forest Education Association. We were able to respond to that clarification fairly quickly. So.
Okay. Pretty straightforward. The next agenda item is the consent agenda.
Move to approve.
I have a movement to approve the minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. Deogracias.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Board committee reports, education, Dr. Thompson.
We are in the process of scheduling a committee in the next week or so.
Were we on the dock to meet tomorrow at 4?
I think we just didn't have enough hands.
The doodle, we didn't, everyone didn't check off the same time on the doodle, so.
I'll check myself back on the soccer field.
Yeah.
Personnel, we have just one short personnel report. Policy, Ms. Williams?
Yes, Ed and I have a meeting on the books, I believe later this week, to discuss some upcoming policy issues.
Finance, Mr. Davis?
No meetings currently planned yet.
Equity Committee, Mr. Martiri is not here, is there anyone else who wanted to speak?
We haven't met yet.
No, our first meeting's not scheduled till later in September, so it's forthcoming.
Facilities?
There's no meeting scheduled as of yet.
Ms. Hickey, Communications?
Nothing to report at the moment.
Straightforward.
There we go, all right. So as far as the district calendar, of course, the board has this information in their packet. This coming Thursday is the Roosevelt, excuse me, next Thursday, pardon me, is the Roosevelt Open House. This coming Friday is our Teacher Institute Day. So the National Equity Project will be here doing the training with our faculty and staff in the Roosevelt South Gym. You'll see on your agenda, of course, our upcoming Cal meeting is scheduled for the 5th. There is a non-attendance day on October 9th, and it's hard to believe it's time for this again, but Friday the 13th is the Roosevelt Fall Fun Fest. If you haven't been to one of those recently, it is a good time. A good time is had by all.
I think I'm assigned to the silly string.
You were, okay. You still probably get some of that out of your clothes.
Takes a long time to recover from that.
It's a great event, great event.
All right.
So that moves us to outside meetings, I guess. Ralph and I usually attend the Council of Governments, and we didn't have one of those scheduled this month, so it looks like the next one is in October. But we'll report once we do that.
Okay. I did attend the last Community Council meeting on September 14th. Ran right from the Lincoln Open House over to OPR. And the superintendent explained the strategic plan process, touched upon the Imagine Committee, and her hopes that those people that are chosen on the Imagine Committee to engage in dialogue about what facilities are like or should be like in the future at OPRF, that those people would commit for a series of years, not just kind of one shot, 3 or 4 years. She talked about the district equity team efforts, including mention of the Tri-Village Equity collaboration that we're a part of. Also talked about the Huskies Scholars Program, which are resources and services and activities all kind of around supporting first-time AP students who are identified through the Equal Opportunity Schools mission. So from there, we went into a brainstorming session on topics for the year, which we always do. We just lay out everything we think our constituency or our boards or whatever organization we're representing would want to hear about. So that's the rest of that. So that was the Community Council. Youth Network Council, Barb?
The Youth Network Council did meet this past week, and people were all checking in with each other. There are some new representatives to that group. And once again, who that is representatives from all of the various agencies that represent the essentially the safety net for kids who have various kinds of challenges in their lives. Thrive is there. Rosecrans, River's Edge. Various different agencies that swing into motion when kids need particular help. I expressed our board's concerns about the challenges of using technology carefully and the things that we had talked about before, and those that fell on very welcoming ears among that group of people. They are concerned for the same reasons that we are. with matters of addiction to tech and the impact of social media on the mental health of young people. So I think those conversations will be ongoing through the year. And the interest is out there among that group of people to begin conversations that might be supportive of kids. And I think that's all on that. I also got to attend the PTO Council, which is always a pleasure. Our PTOs are so dynamic and wonderful. They were in attendance at Ed's office, and they shared all of their upcoming plans, which will be appearing on the district calendar. There's all kinds of wonderful stuff going on in the way of community building. I know Willard had their pancake breakfast last week. If you look at the calendars, there are many, many opportunities to get out there and talk to people about everything that's happening with the PTOs. And they are doing their usual completely amazing job. And I believe everybody was represented at that meeting. Ed, do you want to add anything to that?
I think you covered it.
All right.
Absolutely.
Then. Moving along.
Excellent. Inclusiveness Advisory Board.
We have a meeting scheduled tomorrow evening.
River Forest Service Club, Dr. Thompson.
No meeting has been scheduled yet.
Oh, there's one the 21st. They're going to talk about the new name.
Okay.
I didn't
get any information about it. So
they sent it out like a month ago and asked for comments. Mm. It was a very two or three pages long, and then at the bottom, mm-hmm. I think it may have in a small line, especially with everyone on the 21st.
Okay.
Well, given that you were just named, maybe we'll have to get her on the email.
Yeah, I don't think I'm on the email list.
The email list.
Yeah.
We'll have to do something about that.
Yeah.
We did receive some outreach from the River Forest Service Club asking if D90 would like to partner with them on some of their upcoming community events for this coming year, which, of course, we're really excited about. So we'll be offering some space available for them here in the buildings where they can hold some of their events, and then we're looking forward to hopefully partnering with them in kind of advertising some of the events in the broader community, possibly like the town hall forums, things like that, where having that kind of shared partnership might really be benefit in bringing people out and helping the dialogue, you know, be robust. So we're excited about that.
They're in the process, I know, of redefining themselves and trying to figure out how to reach out to the larger community, which, of course, is also one of our interests and something that we very much want to partner with them in that effort. So we're hoping to hear more.
The West Coast Governing Board. Citizens Court Council.
Don't
CCC.
Worry, I will not take it personally. We have not had a meeting since June. There was one right after the Memorial Day parade. So I think they only meet quarterly, so this is their next one. And I do know that they are looking for new members to add to their roster.
And remind us exactly who they are and what they do, Julie.
Well, they're people who help with events in the community, like the Memorial Day Parade. They help direct traffic and organize all of the support systems that go into that parade.
Are they with the township?
They're kind of on their own. I think they're like a village entity. And it's a coordinated effort between the fire, the police, and then it used to be Ron Sherman.
He retired.
And now it's Mario, I forget his last name.
He's like Ferraro.
Yeah, Mario Ferraro, and he's coordinating this effort in case of emergency kind of crew.
Like
they do training.
Kind of like the civil defense.
So yeah, that's a good
good analogy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they did CPR. They're all up to date on first aid and CPR certification. They've bagged sand at the river before during floods. They're just up on emergency preparedness.
Okay.
Maybe
thank
your
you.
Husband.
Thank
would
you
be
for returning. All right. The next three are all Ralph. Is there anything you'd like that you can
Well, I actually, I can speak for the EdRed event. Ralph and I try to both get to that when we can, but sometimes either he or I will go when the other can't. Main topics that were discussed at EdRed, there was a finance legislation meeting, and so they were reporting on the new Senate Bill 1947 regarding evidence-based funding model and how that will become actionable, which is still, obviously, there are many moving parts and the need for a lot of clarification. But they shared a lot of great information about the adequacy model, and I think it was helpful for everyone who was there. They also talked about the new pension legislation pertaining to TRS, which will result in the creation of a Tier 3. And that is, I think, really significant, not so much for current employees, but as District 90 and other school districts across Illinois hire new teachers moving forward. This will offer new staff the opportunity to have a defined contribution plan instead of a defined benefit plan, which is a significant departure from the current model. Current Tier 1 or 2 employees also have the ability to transition to that if they wish. The speculation is that that won't happen much with Tier 1 employees, but Tier 2 employees who are under a modified pension plan that was instituted back in 2011 might find the new defined contribution plan to be more appealing than the current system. So more information to come, but there will certainly be implications for employees moving forward.
Thank you. One last, River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration.
We will
skip
be meeting
J.
on Wednesday.
Did I?
Skip J.
Tri-board.
Sorry?
Tri-board.
Tri-board.
Oh, I lumped those three.
I'm sorry.
For Ralph together.
Since he's not here.
One mistake of meetings.
That was
it.
You're done.
You're
done.
River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration.
The subcommittee will be meeting on Wednesday evening to talk further about communication. I hope Dawn could join us, but I've not given her much of a heads up. If she's not there, it's my fault, not hers. All right.
We should plan for a long night in the next business meeting because all of these will be reported out next time.
You bet.
District meeting agendas?
The only one we have, of course, is PTO Council, and Barb did a great job, I think, summarizing that event. Of course, we hold those meetings monthly, and it continues to just wow us all, I think, the things that our PTOs do for our kids and our families. So we're very, very fortunate to have their leadership. So. But much of the meeting, of course, was contained with kind of organizational elements. September started.
Getting off the ground.
Getting off
the
ground. Perfect way to say it.
That moves us right into your report.
Great. Although one thing I should mention that I think was exciting, the board at the retreat talked a little bit about technology. And, of course, there were several people at the last board meeting when Ralph asked folks about the legacy that our board wanted to bring to the district, who talked about technology and supporting parents and families. And at the PTO Council meeting, that issue was broached, and it sounds like the PTOs are going to go back to their, you know, as leadership teams and talk about whether or not there might not be an opportunity for a partnership with the district in supporting some forthcoming programs. So that's really exciting. We'll know more probably at the October meeting.
I expect.
Yeah. So as far as the report tonight, we do have one action item that's particularly important, and of course we just held the budget hearing moments ago, but we do need to adopt the proposed tentative budget for the current 2017-2018 school year. So Anthony, I was going to hope that you might just walk the board through the final draft of the proposed budget and acknowledge any changes that the board would want to be aware of before they vote to formally adopt.
Okay, thanks. As you see in your memo, this is the final draft of the 2017-18 budget. As the last couple of times you've seen this, all of the changes are highlighted in bold. So to discuss them, and if you look on page 69 of your board packet, before I get into the changes, I'd like to go over very quickly the executive summary for this budget. For those of you new to this, it may be the first time you've seen a budget adopted, so I'll go over the significant funds in this. The first is the education fund, which shows the definition of the education fund on that page. And that significant revenues were estimated doing the following things, knowing that the budgeted revenues of about $20 million represents about 80% of the total district budgeted revenues, so education fund is your largest fund. Property taxes were the sum of the remaining installment of the 2016 tax extension, plus an estimated first installment of the 2017 tax extension that you'll receive in March of 2018. And the applicable CPI increase for those property taxes was 0.7%. School fees are calculated using the most current fee schedule that you approved back in the spring. And then state and federal aid are based on the calculations from the new Public Act 100-0465, or as Ed referenced as Senate Bill 1947, which is the current allocation information for non-EBFF, or evidence-based funding formula categoricals, and state-approved grant budgets. Expenditures in this fund, in the education fund, are budgeted about $20 million, again, $278,000, and that represents almost 82% of budgeted expenditures. And those were estimated to come from the negotiated union contract, where salaries included that 2.1% salary increase plus the additional 0.5% for the additional institute day. And then for that was in for certified personnel, adjusting for the change in number of employees. In addition, there were some base salary increases for educational lane increases. There were $197,000 allocated for the new Thursday meeting stipend that was negotiated in the contract, as well as the about $100,000 for eased restrictions on the staff-initiated curriculum work stipend per the negotiated contract. Those educational lane increases that I mentioned, there were about $28,000 in those. And then finally, there was a 2.5% average increase for non-certified personnel, once again adjusted for the change in numbers of employees. Employee benefits included a weighted average increase in health insurance costs of about 7.7%. That's with our PPO and our HMO combined. Also, per the negotiated contract, your contributions towards health insurance for all employees hired after July 1 of 13 is at a reduced amount, thus making a two-tier system for that. Supplies and materials included the $184,000 for a K-8 math textbook adoption. $100-something thousand in that, $102,000, I believe, is what you've already approved, and the remaining $82,000 is what we've estimated that you will be approving sometime later after the piloting is over for the second textbook adoption. The technology plan figures have all been included. And transfers out represent your debt service payments, and there'll be a resolution in June that will talk about that transfer. Operations and maintenance fund, the revenues are about 8.5% of total district budget revenues, so still a significant fund, but not nearly as large as education. Property taxes are calculated the same way as education, and then other local revenues include the contributions from the park district as well as our net E-rate reimbursements. One item note there is our net E-rate reimbursements have been reduced from previous years because of the updated restrictions on eligible telecommunication costs. We don't get as much that we can get reimbursed for under E-rate. On the expenditures, you know, operations and maintenance, it represents about 7.5% of your total budgeted expenditures.
Anthony, I think Mr. Davis has a question.
What's the $5,000 contribution for?
That's an intergovernmental agreement from the Park District for the use of our facilities.
Okay.
And the E-rate, I apologize, the E-rate, the reduction in the E-rate was from the state kind of handed down.
The federal changes in that. We not nearly as much as our telecommunication charges are eligible for E-rate. That was a change about at the beginning of, near the end of last year. It's pretty much restricted now to internet service providers. So your local, long distance, those things that used to be eligible are no longer. The salaries are based on a 2.5% average increase, adjusting for the change in number of employees, and the benefit employee benefits have that weighted average increase, as I mentioned before. Transportation fund, those revenues of about $360,000 are 1.5% of the total budgeted revenues. Property taxes are calculated the same. And state aid is based on the most current allocation information. You receive a special education transportation grant from the state. Transportation expenditures are about 2.1% of the total budgeted expenditures, and those are transportation costs. They're expected to reduce from the prior year due to the expected out-of-district enrollment figures, student enrollment figures. Interscholastic and field trip transportation is based upon current vendor costs. Working cash fund. As you're familiar with what we use the working cash fund for, it's established with a bond issue and some small property tax levy. And those property taxes are the same calculation as before, and then there's interest income, and that's expected to remain relatively constant. There are no expenditures in the working cash fund. All you do is transfer out to areas that are needed, and this year we don't feel there's any needed. So very quickly, to go over the changes from the previous one, if you go back to page 68, and if you can, I'll refer to page 68, you can refer to page 71. The education fund receipts increased by $101,000 from the last time, and that is due to two things. It's due to a $131,000 increase in state funding through the new Senate Bill 1947. Now, I do not want you to feel or think that the evidence-based funding formula gave us $131,000 of money. That was not the case. But our estimations of what that would be were just based on very rudimentary figures from previous years. So this is now the actual amount that we should be receiving this year when we were just had a placeholder in there before. And what it did was consolidated five different areas. And if you look at the bolded items on page 71, what used to be revenue line 3001 was called general state aid, along with special education extraordinary, special ed personnel reimbursement, special ed summer school, and the bilingual grant. Those were all, as you can see, those are all zeros now. Those are all consolidated into the one evidence-based funding formula. So the $1,070,000 is what we'll be receiving this year, now that the state's ability, the ability to voucher that money is starting. The increase of $101,000 was offset, I'm sorry, $131,000 was offset by a decrease in $30,000 in corporate personal property replacement taxes due to the Illinois Department of Revenue's notification to us that there'll be a 24% reduction in that replacement tax fund. The education fund expenditures increased by about $43,000, and that's due to a $31,000 increase for updated salary and benefit information. Mostly that is the educational lane increases that you approved last month. A $15,000 increase in additional technology equipment due to additional students in the one-to-one program. A $20,000 increase in Title I supplies based on the submitted grant, and all offset by the $23,000 decrease in board contributions towards TRS for federal programs. We have a Title I program which we charge salaries to, and there used to be a much larger percentage rate that you had to tie to those federal funded salaries. Well, as part of the new legislation, there's now a reduction in that mandated TRS percentage from 44.61 down to 10.10%. So that was a $23,000 decrease in expenditures. So there are no other changes. Therefore, the cumulative effect of those net changes is a increase to the education fund balance of $58,400. And since there's no other changes in any other fund, increase in the total June 30, 2018 estimated fund balance for all funds is that $58,400. So this final draft is up for your adoption. If there are no questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions, but if there are no questions, we put it back to a vote. What if you do approve or adopt the budget tonight, it'll be filed by hand with the county clerk, since we don't trust the mail system on something so important, and it'll be filed electronically with the State Board of Ed. So any questions at all?
Who drives?
He's actually a very good driver. Very good driver.
PTO. PTO is on a bus.
That's very thorough. Thank you.
So just one question, comment would be, back in March, everybody met at the, you know, at the township, and everybody's taxes went up basically 40 to 60%. What does that look like for next year in terms of our budget?
Your taxes went up 40 to 60% or your assessed valuation?
Assessed value.
Okay, big difference.
I know.
Remember, your next year's taxes will reflect your increase in your assessed valuation. Regardless of changes in assessed valuation, you are restricted in the amount of revenues you can receive by the tax cap. So any one person, one homeowner's increase in their assessed valuation, if that person's increase in their EAV goes up much larger than the average increase in town, they will see a hit in their property taxes. They'll get a much larger tax bill. There are people, if they received an increase that's equivalent to the average across town, they won't see an increase in their tax bill due to anything that the district has done. What they will see is an increase in their assessed valuation, but then a related decrease in their tax rate, because the formula doesn't allow for it. If the product or the the quotient, if you want to be mathematically correct, of the assessed valuation over the rate equals your amount of taxes that you can be extended, and the amount that can be extended can only go up by either 0.7% or 2.1% with regards to whichever CPI you're working with, and your assessed valuation goes way up, your tax rate has to go way down. So I'm sure there'll be hundreds of people who think that's crazy talk because their tax bill is going to go way up, but I assure you there will be property owners, they don't have to be homeowners, but property owners or PINs in this district where the EAV will go increase much lower than the average or even go down based on the new assessed valuations, and their tax bills will reflect that as well.
I think because of your work and Ed's work and D90 in general, we haven't had that be a burden on the taxpayers of Riverfor. So with that, can I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Second.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Dr. Thompson?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Thank you. One last thing. This is the only document of the year that everyone in attendance must sign, so no running off at the end of the year. Thanks.
Record-breaking meeting.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cozy. We appreciate your attention to detail on that document. It is critical. So a few other information items this evening. We wanted to extend kind of officially our congratulations to both elementary schools for holding outstanding open houses last week. Both Willard and Lincoln held their open houses on Thursday night. And to banner crowds, both Mr. Godfrey and Ms. Wood presented to the families in attendance, did a fantastic job outlining the district's goals and some of their school goals, talking about the way in which teachers work together for student success. It was really an inspirational night, I think, across the board. As important, or maybe more so to parents, were the times that they got to spend in the classroom with the teachers and walking through the buildings. It was really apparent how lovingly our teachers, I think, prepared for that night, trying to make sure they used the time well. And I think how thoughtfully they communicated with families about the value they place in a partnership. So we're excited about hosting the Roosevelt Open House a week from Thursday. And as Larry Garsky likes to say, that will mark the official start to the school year. All of those beginning of year events are kind of at that point behind you and you are off truly and running. So that's a full house for those of you who've been in attendance at a Roosevelt Open House. There's lots of folks and parking is at a premium. So if you're planning to attend, come early and hopefully it'll be a nice day. Wanted to talk very briefly about the proposed Committee of the Whole meeting topics. In your board packet, board members will see this on page 86. So these are still proposed. We will very soon, I know, kind of have an Education Committee meeting to kind of hammer them down. But even when we do, I wanted to reassure the board that these are fluid. You know, our intention of trying to have a tentative calendar for these topics is to ensure that there are no major initiatives or areas of responsibility that don't get the level of attention that you would wish. But as we all know, occasionally something will happen during the course of the year where we might need to either, you know, shuffle this a bit, either to ensure that we get certain information to the board or the community sooner, or in some cases we may have presentations where the folks that are working on some of that requisite information just aren't ready, such as a curriculum presentation, something like that. So they're not set in stone, but I think they are a good jumping off place, and we'll talk at the forthcoming Ed Committee meeting a little bit about the information behind some of these topics and why the administrative team feels like they'd be really important things for the board to learn more about.
Well, the business meetings definitely get into the weeds of everything we do, but the COWs, I think, they answer a lot of questions for parents and communities, so I love the list.
Right, thanks. So, any questions about those or why maybe some of those topics are currently recommended when they are during the course of the upcoming year?
My question was why literacy both in the second half, but I think that's something you're going to talk about maybe. Talk a little bit about the instructional coaches' activities. Mm-hmm. I think that is kind of threaded through here.
But largely, the main reason that the literacy reports to the board will take place in the second half of the year is just because they need to do a lot of foundational front-end work to gear up and make sure that they're ready to start discussing some of the curriculum decisions they'll be making. There's some visioning that goes on and value setting. While all that's important, that may not be, you know, kind of at the level that the board is of interest, has of interest. That will inform, obviously, subsequent decisions. But when they come to present to the board, I think initially it will probably be a progress update, and then in the spring, fingers crossed, a recommendation of the use of some resources, so, which will hopefully be seeking board approval at that time. So, and of course, you can see next month, actually, we're excited. We'll be sharing some information about the proposed partnership with the West Cook Y, and Philip Jimenez, who is the executive director, will be with us. So that'll be a nice opportunity to learn more about Power Scholars. Student enrollment registration process review, as much as anything, this really is kind of an administrative management element, but we wanted to share with the board that we feel as though it's time for this to get a closer look. Many of our parents in attendance know very well the process that a family needs to go through to enroll their child and then register them on an annual basis. It's a lot of work. And I think most of our parents are very patient with us or try to be. Of course, it's a challenge, particularly when you've got multiple children. The biggest hurdle that the district has to navigate specific to enrollment is, on the one hand, to making sure that we're inclusive and not setting up artificial barriers that might make it difficult for people who are legitimate residents of the Village of River Forest to enroll, while at the same time ensuring that we're not inadvertently enrolling families that are not residents of River Forest. Obviously, through the school code, we have a very specific charge that we are to just enroll River Forest residents. But that's tricky. And while on the surface, you would think that there would be some safeguards to that would be very, very clear. That process is made more confounding by, you know, many laws, many of which are well-intended, and exceptions that we have to navigate. And to do so thoughtfully and respectfully, I think, is really important. The board has a behind all of this new student registration information. We wanted to just give you a packet of the forms that are currently in use and the process that families go through. You'll see there's a piece of correspondence in there that we also wanted you to have. It's a board-only document. That also calls attention to the fact that maybe, you know, there are some things we can do that will ensure, again, that this process is inclusive, and that we are requiring those documents that are necessary without requiring information that is onerous for families. So we'll be embarking upon that this fall, and we'll report back to you.
Will the administrative team be making recommendations about how we might make this an easier and more inclusive process?
Yes, I think what you'll get from us are broad recommendations and then some very specific changes in procedure.
Okay.
Or potentially not, in fairness, if we do this kind of soup to nuts review.
If you're looking at it and you decide that it's okay the way it is, then
of course we'll look at best practice from the State Board of Ed and all of that too. I'm not sure exactly. There you go. The way you said that. We also are excited to share a little bit of information about our standards-based grading initiative. I know we're lucky we have good Dr. Hawley in the room, as well as Dawn Simmons, who worked hard on the communications plan that's in here. So if board members wanted to turn in their packets to page 113, you'll see the first of two documents. And this one may or may not look familiar to our returning board members. The first one, this is our transition and implementation plan for the standards-based grading initiative. When you saw this probably for the first time last year, I'm sure you thought to yourselves, 4 years, that's a long time. Well, we're a year closer to implementation, and this coming year we obviously, you'll see on that plan, have some very specific things we need to do. Anything you wanted to share about the transition plan, or just very generally as we're moving towards standards-based grading, that the board should be aware of at this point in the process?
I think year one was all about inquiry on the part of the committee. What is it? What's the rationale for why we've shifted to standards-based grading? How is it different from what we're currently doing? And looking at best practice research around that. So now that the committee has a general idea of, more than a general idea of
the mission behind standards-based grading. It's time to determine ways to communicate it out and build capacity beyond the committees. So that's the biggest push this year, I think, for communicating with all the stakeholders so they understand what the initiative is about and why we feel it's important.
Having implemented standards-based grading over the past 6 years, and just reviewing emails from 2012, some of the questions are still come around,
yeah.
Especially with new teachers. We have a traditional grading system that's 100 years old and doesn't necessarily communicate to parents accurately, you know, what a student knows and what a student doesn't know. And I think that's the purpose of standards-based grading. So I think that looking at your timeline is very overarching and long-term and thorough. So I would suggest that maybe in the 2017-18 school year, as you begin to play with PowerSchool, that the administrators have a mock classroom and just, you know, take some of those homework assignments and see how can you translate that onto the standards. When you flip that switch, it looks very different. Teachers, and so I think administrators having that experience when people come knocking, and when teachers come knocking, what does this mean?
Yeah, and I think the second half of this year, towards the end, we'll start looking at ways that we can format or structure what that could or should look like. So we're getting closer, baby steps.
But a big part of doing that work well is communicating to folks why we're doing it in the first place, because as I think you implied, there's a lot of questions about what standards-based grading is for and why we would make a transition, especially when people, as parents, we remember our own experience and we think, well, that seemed to work out for us, why would we grade differently in 2017? Dawn's put together, I think, an excellent communications plan, so kudos to her, and we'll be discussing this. This is not final, this is actually a document. This starts on 114 in your board packet. It's also a little bit fluid. We'll be talking with the Superintendent's Leadership Council next week, Wednesday, about some of the finer points in here and how we can maybe refine this to make it better. The bottom line is we will not be able to communicate enough, no matter how strategic we are, no matter how much outreach we do on what the switch to standards-based grading is all about and why it is an advantage our kids. So to start early and be thorough and have a plan makes a whole lot of sense. But again, we can answer any questions you might have about that either tonight or on another day. So hats off to Dawn for her work.
Thank you, Dawn.
And then the last item, Superintendent's report tonight, is about the district website. You know, while we always like to under-promise and over-deliver, frankly, we had hoped that the district website might be ready the end of this month. We're probably going to need a few extra weeks to get it up and out. There are a couple of contributing factors to this. One real factor, honestly, is the amount of content we have on our current site. And while we don't want to lose any content from our current site that's of value, we know we need to streamline information that is of no longer value or possibly is no longer as relevant as it was. And it's robust. There's a lot of information in there. So going through it fairly in a diligent manner, with a fine-tooth comb, making sure that we're transferring the information we need and not the stuff that will just bog it down, is taking a little more time than we expected. We are also trying to ensure that the new website meets the accessibility requirements. So there is a thing that I try to say by memory, but I never can, called the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines 2.0. I was reading off my cheat sheet. That really governs the way in which a website needs to function to meet the ADA accessibility standards. And hats off to Kevin Martin, but he's also working to ensure that our new vendors implementing all of those respective components so that we know when we roll it out, it's cutting edge. So, long story short, we appreciate your patience. We'd like to make sure that when we cut the ribbon on it, it's something we can be really proud of, and I think you'll see that. But we did need a little bit more time.
And that is going to link to the PTO websites?
So the PTO websites will link to ours, yes.
Okay.
So you'll be able to click through to the PTO sites.
Because I know they have done some work on theirs as well.
Absolutely. Some really good work. different, you know, the PTOs all manage their own respective websites independently, but, you know, having those links, as well as some other key community links in the past, you know, we've had links that will get you to the public library. We've also had, and my understanding is we're going to be retaining this, Kevin's not here at the moment, but we've also had a community bulletin board element, which I think has been a really great way for us to make information available for community organizations without us necessarily endorsing whatever it is that the event is or the initiative is. So we're going to try and retain that kind of flavor to it, but to bring it up to 2017, it's shocking. Dawn, I'm sure, could share a whole lot more information, but how fast the innovation is moving forward in terms of how the website do and the feel and the way.
This is what people expect to see when they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mid-August. Probably mid to later in October.
All right.
Friday 13th. We probably will intentionally not go live on Friday the 13th. Maybe the 12th is the first day. All right, so that's our report. Sorry, I didn't mean to strike.
Look forward to that.
We're excited about it, too.
Upcoming meetings, committee of the whole, October 3rd, here at Bruce Franklin Middle School, and business meeting on October 15th, 7 o'clock. Cool. That moves us to our personnel report. Any questions about the...
All we have this evening on the personnel report are two independent contractor employment agreements. These are both individuals that are assisting us in the music program. It's a small kind of honorarium that they receive for their assistance, but their contributions are really small. So we're grateful for their
service. Do those affect all of the schools or?
No, just two of them, and they're both members of in the band program. So yes, we
have a motion to approve the independent contractor employment contracts.
So moved.
Second.
Ms. Williams.
Yes.
Dr. Thompson.
Yes.
Mr. Moore.
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey.
Yes.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Yes.
Mr. Davis.
Yes.
Before we adjourn, is that what's next?
What's that?
You can sit here if you want.
I said before we adjourn, just one question. So, and what is the mechanism to follow up on the request made of Mr. Is it Kunster?
Kenster.
Of this board. What is the mechanism to follow through or follow up on that?
Well, in any case, when you have a request from a community member of the board of any type, can be, we typically require the board would direct superintendent if they wanted him or her to take action that's different from the standard policy that's in place. You know, your administrative team has flexibility on things that are administrative procedures, but items that are memorialized in policy are board directives, so we're required to follow them unless the board directs otherwise. So you, as a board, could certainly indicate consensus that you wanted to see the item brought back to a subsequent board meeting, and after discussion or not, it could be, you know, direction given. But it would require probably that level of intercession for the administration not to follow a board policy that's in place.
Does this board have any thoughts on, you didn't have the opportunity to discuss?
Are we going into closed session regarding this other issue?
No. But the board could indicate, and you wouldn't have to do it tonight, of course, but the board could indicate that they wish to discuss that matter as a vote as a student matter, if they wish, in closed session. So.
So moved.
Well, it wouldn't require actually action tonight. You would just be able to indicate that to Ralph as board president, that at the upcoming meeting, you know,
we want to consider.
Your suggestion would be the request that he would add a closed session agenda item.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
that can happen. Kind of the protocol for our board is typically that can happen for any board member, is to extend that request to the board president. And in the past,
past, as you know, Ralph has typically honored a board request for an agenda item, a board member request.
Okay.
So any board member that's here and would like to see that can reach out to Ralph and in the same time before the next board meeting or the next calendar meeting.
But that would be independent of the agenda tonight.
It
that
would just
be
because
a separate contact
we don't have any
item.
Items
okay.
that would allow us to necessarily consider it
okay.
this evening. So I'm sure that's probably frustrating, but without a mechanism, you know, the board agenda is very prescriptive. We have to post in advance all of this.
I understand that.
So, but anyway, hopefully that answered some questions.
Yes, thank you.
So when is the next meeting?
October 3rd.
October 3rd.
Tuesday.
Okay, so
yeah, I'm happy she posed that question, because I thought we were at some point we were going to get to that in either, so.
So would anything be decided then, or?
So I guess to kind of bring it full circle, if one of the board members, or including Ralph, who's not here tonight, indicated from your correspondence that they wish to consider the matter as a board, they could do so in either open session or closed. The board president would make that decision. It would very likely be enclosed because it would be pursuant to a student matter, really,
right.
which is, since they're minors, it's a private matter. And then they would be able to discuss that. But that happening would be contingent upon the board president agreeing to add that as an agenda item.
Right.
So I know that leaves you with a lot of ambiguity this evening, but that's kind of the nature of the...
Well, no, it's like whether it's on the agenda or not by October.
And certainly the board president, if for some reason that was not the case, I would obviously circle back with you. So there will be subsequent communication. You need closure. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yeah, they started working today, so hopefully we'll get our house back.
Thank you.
Movement to adjourn.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Hi.
Hi.